Welcome to You Should Travel, a podcast about one man's mission to get to 100 countries. I am that man. I'm currently on country 98. Today, you are going to hear an episode from Canada, which doesn't count as a tick-off because I've already been there many, 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 many times. But it is a really good podcast, and I'm quite proud of this one. Not an easy one to make, as you will hear. It will begin in a minute, and you will learn all about a good chunk about Canada. Certainly my experience of it. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we start, though, I'd just like to tell you something. I'm doing the Edinburgh Festival, which I have done before, but I'm doing the whole of the Edinburgh Festival, which I can't remember, but I think it's 23 shows in a row. It's a comedy show, and it's been on tour for years, but I always like to settle down in Edinburgh for August. So this August, if you're anywhere near Scotland, make the effort to come up. It's called The History of Electronic Music. I was given a rave tape in the 1990s, and it changed my life. Now, I use a sampler to travel through time. We discover how the tunes on that tape came about. The show begins about 40,000 years ago. And we talk about what was the first ever instrument, who started sampling in the 1940s, what was found in a Chicago secondhand store that changed music forever, and what's the most sampled sample ever sampled. All of that will be discovered, including other things like who is Roland? Find out and laugh your tits off. Get tickets at historyofelectronic.com. That's historyofelectronic.com. The History of Electronic Music is playing every single night at 6 p.m. in the tunnels. But if you want all the information and tickets, it's only 11 quid a ticket. historyofelectronic.com. And if you've never been to the Edinburgh Festival, I just want to clear something up very quickly before we start the podcast on Canada. And that is, it's really fucking expensive to be a performer, which it's just weird. You would expect, obviously, that performers get paid. A lot of us do, but you'll be lucky if you break even. So my final note on that is, whether you're coming to my show or not, and why wouldn't you come to mine, you fool? But if you are going to the Edinburgh Festival to see any shows, give generously, because most of us performers don't actually get paid when all is said and done, and you've paid for your train ticket to Scotland and your massive amount of tech that I have to carry with me, and then of course my accommodation for a whole month, and then all the other stuff, including hiring my own venue. It's a funny old game, the Edinburgh Festival, but I'll tell you what, people don't do it for the money. No one does, but they do it for the fun, and it has to be probably the most fun you can have legally. Throughout the whole of August, the biggest arts festival in the world is Edinburgh. Come along and watch The History of Electronic Music. More information at historyofelectronic.com. Right, let's get into this, shall we? Let's get into Canada. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you probably more of a Western country than usual, eh? This is Canada, eh? Hello world, and welcome to Canada. And as I get out of my car, oh, here we go. Good timing. Along comes a big ass train rumbling down the railroad. And I'm at quite an interesting spot, actually, both in my life and physically, in that I'm at the last spike. The last spike is where they put the last spike in on the railroad that crosses the whole of Canada. I'm in BC, and there's a plaque here. It says, "A nebulous dream was a reality. An iron ribbon crossed Canada from sea to sea, often following the footsteps of early explorers. Nearly 3,000 miles of steel rail pushed across the vast prairies, cleft lofty mountain passes, then twisted through canyons and bridged 1,000 streams." Here on November the 7th, 1885, a plane iron spike welded east to west. The last spike went into the train railroad. And that railroad is still rumbling away as we speak. This
is the obscenely, obnoxiously, inconceivably massive country of Canada, my home off and on for the last 20 years, a place that has completely transformed and shaped my life and so many others that have come from all over the world to set up something new. It started for me 20 years ago in a nightclub in Brighton, where I met a woman wearing a baseball cap. And I went up to her and I said, "I assume you're American." To which, understandably, she was not impressed. She said, "I'm Canadian, how did you know?" I said, "Because you're wearing a baseball cap in a nightclub." And we fell in love. Well, it took a bit longer than that, but we certainly became an item. So much so, I said, "Hey, hot potato pie," because I was full of smooth lines back in those days, "why don't I move to Canada?" I've just realised this noise is quite annoying. Don't worry, these trains are about 3 kilometres long, so should be over in 3 hours. I'll move up the hill a bit away from the railroad, or the railway as we call it. Yeah, so I met a girl. She was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met her. She wasn't, but I like saying it. And I moved to Canada. And since then, best part of 20 years later, it's become my second home. I say second home because I never really... Oh, Jesus, that is annoying, isn't it? I've just realised that this is such a bad place to do an introduction for a podcast. I'm going to fade it down and carry on from elsewhere.
You've had some decent weather, haven't you?
Yeah,
yeah,
it rained yesterday.
No, on Sunday.
Well, we drove in here.
Rain Sunday. And then it was really lots of thunder and everything last night.
Some people talking weather, which of course is the most profoundly boring conversation a human being can have. But I have to say there's a lot of people that do it, and a lot of them are Canadian. So here I am at the last spike. I didn't even tell you where it was, did I? BC, not that far from Kelowna, where I flew in. And what I'm going to try and do during this podcast is I'm going to try and explain the country of Canada. It's by far and away the most daunting I've done. I've done so many podcasts from around the world, but this one's just fucking scary. Because the more you know about a place... I can only speak for myself, the more I feel like I need to make sure it's not a disservice and to be actually quite accurate. And the less you know about the place, conversely, the easier it is. For example, I think I did a podcast from Togo. I was only there for a couple of days. I don't know that much about it, but I went to a witchcraft market and I said, you know what, that'll do me. That's a podcast. The problem with Canada is I do know quite a lot about it. I am quite knowledgeable. I've met one of the prime ministers. I've lived here. I've worked on the radio. I've met loads of people. I've set up a company. I've travelled a good chunk of it. And it's quite daunting. As I walk right now in this beautiful valley, the Okanagan Valley, right? Here in British Columbia, train lines so often follow rivers. A beautiful, beautiful scene. Something you might see on a picture postcard of Canada, yeah? Big mountains in the background, not quite the white snow-capped ones of the Rockies, but we're not far from them. And that whole crease in the earth is a whole bunch of different mountains and hills of varying spectacular beauty. And as I walk, well, I love Canada. It pisses me off as well. So we'll try and get into the good, the bad, and the ugly. But to make it more interesting, I'm going to do it all from what I know. Because I could get AI to read you out a load of facts, or we could just copy and paste a load of shit off Wikipedia. And some of it would be quite interesting. For example, did you know the population actually shrank last year by about 0.1%? Did you know that one of the years under Justin Trudeau, it actually grew by 1 million, which doesn't sound like much until you consider
that it went from 36 to 37 million in a year. So, yeah, we could do stuff like that. But after about 15 facts, you'll be like, okay, cool, cheers. I'm going to tune out and watch some pornography. I want these words to be your oral porn. That's not sounding exactly what I meant. But you know what I'm saying. I want you to stay locked as I describe my life here and the changes it's made to me. And we'll start here because it seems like a good place. I mean, after all, it is arguably where East met West. It absolutely is not the middle of the country by any shape of the imagination. But you have to bear in mind, people were heading west. Just like in the US of A, of course, they were heading west for a new life, quite often for gold, for tin, for copper, for whatever else could be mined out of the ground, the new riches of a new world. And to transport all that stuff, they needed a railroad. And this railroad, a single track railroad, which I'm assuming the rails have been replaced a few times, but it's exactly where it was when it was first laid out and met up the two seas of Canada. And it was laid a lot by the Chinese. And you know what really annoys me about this? I know for a fact there's a busload of Chinese people over there, and none of them have walked far enough to read the plaque, which is incredibly relevant to them. So who built this railway? Well, there was only a pathetic amount of people actually living in BC. I think it was as low as 30,000 when they were building this, and there was just nowhere near enough workers. So they said, okay, if we're going to meet this line, to bear in mind this line had pushed all the way across Canada to here, BC. BC's, this, if you're familiar with Canada, it's the province that's got Vancouver in it, right? To put it in a geographical term, it's the one on the far left next to oil-rich Alberta. So what happened was they got as many guys as they could from here. That wasn't enough. So they said, why don't we hire gangs, Chinese gangs? Now, a lot of Chinese people had left China to evade oppressive poverty and mad policies, and they found themselves here in North America. If they weren't going to find gold in California, they might well be up here. And they're enlisted in gangs to build this railroad. Wasn't slavery, but it was very rough. They were sleeping in tents, they were working in extreme conditions, and they were eating rice and usually some salmon, locally caught, but it would not be fresh, let's just say that. So dried salmon and maybe some rice and whatever sustenance they could find along the way from the various plant life. And they worked hard, very hard. And if it wasn't for them, this railroad would not have been built. And I don't know, sorry to make it into a modern thing, but it really pisses me off that there's a whole busload of Chinese people that have just got off. They've gone straight down to the railroad. They've taken all the photographs, them sort of dancing about, pretending to hold on to a tree from a distance, etc. And the entire busload of Chinese tourists didn't read any of the information, some of which was in Mandarin. In fact, they didn't walk the 20 metres to read the huge signs with the information on them. This was recorded afterwards with a sheet over my head, but I just thought it important to tell you. People, occasionally, put your fucking phones down. Now, I assume that they had a man on their coach who stood up and did a whole half-hour speech about it. But to be honest, I don't think so. Anyway, that's why you beautiful, curious mind, are here. So why is the railroad important? Well, it set up Canada, and now you can cross Canada on it. Not cheaply, I should add. And every train I've seen that's coming down here is hauling all kinds of shite that ironically has actually come from China. Canadian Tire, for example, is the B&Q of Canada, yeah? It's the home hardware of Canada. And nearly every shipping container that was on the back of the huge diesel locomotive that just came past me was stamped with Canadian Tire. So we're talking gazebos. We're talking outdoor furniture. Or actually probably now, being that it's nearly July, we're talking coats that you might want to wear if you're on a autumn fishing trip. And what else, other bollocks you might find in one of those stores. Everything from toilet plungers to screws. And it's all made in China. And isn't it beautiful that the Chinese that built this so long ago wouldn't have a clue that one day their economic powerhouse will be delivering goods to the very people at both ends of this line. Ooh, amazing stuff. Why am I here? During this podcast, I'd like to give a synopsis, an overview of Canada. I'd like to do so by telling you about my experiences here. And what I'd like to do is start at this logical point. Well, actually, I say that. I mean, if I was really going to start at a logical point, you'd start in Newfoundland and you'd slowly work your way, just as the population did, west. The population, I should mention, by the way, before I get in hot water, the population of immigrants that came to settle in the country, not the thousands of indigenous people that lived here. But if you think about the filling of Canada, the way that here we are in 2026 and there's, I can't remember, 37 million people here. How did it happen? Well, listen, a good chunk of them were born here, but as is the story of North America, it was almost entirely down to immigration. Something that is often forgotten by the Trump government in recent months. At least here we have Mark Carney. And I'm actually not being sarcastic. All the right-wingers just tuned out. So what am I doing? Well, tomorrow is Canada Day, so that means it's quite... Oh, God, they're doing photos in the distance. Tomorrow's Canada Day. Why do I have such an aversion to people having a good time in photographs? Because it's all bollocks, isn't it? That's why. You ever see anyone do a photograph, smiling, laughing, doing stupid faces, and then they immediately just look as miserable as shit when they put it back in their pocket? Yeah, tomorrow's Canada Day, and that marks the independence from my other nation, England, and in 1867, the Canadians became independent. You could argue that they still hung on to a lot of our stuff. You could still argue that they still do. After all, the Queen's on the money. They haven't got round to putting the King on the money. I mean, let's be honest, one of these days someone's going to say, is that relevant? Do we have to keep doing that? But somehow, the royal family still have a bit of skin in the game here. So, welcome to Canada. As I say, I feel a great deal of pressure to get this one right. And because I feel that, I can absolutely guarantee you that I'll get it wrong. So if we could just allow me a little bit of grace on that, that'd be lovely. But right now, I start this journey next to where they drove in the final spike on this railroad, next to a beautiful meandering river, wildly going through National Park with every conceivable tree in view. And I'm pleased to say, unlike a lot of BC, this has not been ravaged by fires recently. So it is green and gorgeous. And I'm going to get in the car and I'm going to go to a town called Revelstoke. And in Revelstoke, I will check into a hotel. And tomorrow is Canada Day. So I thought, why not go out on my own in Revelstoke and see if I can get chatting to people tomorrow. And maybe we can start building more of a picture of Canada by getting drunk together. So, well, you know, it used to be British. It's very much a pastime of the Canadians to have a few beers. And what day could you celebrate more than their Independence Day? Canada Day, of course, is a day off. And I'll delete all of the bits that make me sound like a slurring wreck. We'll move on and I'll start telling you about my story in Canada and what I think of the place and my peculiar relationship with it. Welcome to the second biggest country in the world, the Great White North, the beaver, the maple leaf, the wonderfully friendly people outside Toronto. Welcome to the far more quiet and sedate streets of Revelstoke, British Columbia. What so far appears to be a beautiful town, I can see very large, proper mountains with snow caps around me. And I can see why this place is so famed for skiing and snowboarding. I'm looking at a ski lift now that goes up to a very green hill, but when it's not knocking on July's door, man, this is the place for adventure. I'm going to walk to the pub and I'm going to have a meal and I'm going to be a very good boy and drink nothing alcoholic because tomorrow is Canada Day and I will probably have a good old session, of which, if you play your lucky cards right, I'll bring you with me. But what I thought I'd do on this walk, it looks like about 15 minutes to the pub, through very pristine, clean streets. Almost feels like Switzerland, if Switzerland allowed garish advertising for fucking massive tyre shops. Interesting that I just said that. There's a place there called the Swiss Chalet Motel, which I think couldn't look much less like a Swiss chalet. But there's always been this grip to European exuberance, particularly in the luxury brand market. The chicken restaurant Swiss Chalet. I don't know if you think your buildings look like Swiss chalets, but before you called your restaurant Swiss Chalet, did you go to Switzerland and stay in a chalet? Swiss chalets, like everything in Switzerland, is beautiful. Now, this is exactly what I knew would happen already. I've caught myself at least giving Canada a bit of a kick already. And you'll see this happens quite a lot. I have a very peculiar relationship with Canada because it's changed my life for the better, which we're about to get into, but it's just a bit fucking garish at times. And I say that to Canadians, and they're like, oh yeah, well, everything's older in Europe, you know, what did you want us to do? I don't know, I didn't have the rule book, or nor did my ancestors, but I'll tell you what I didn't want you to do. Put up obnoxiously bland big box stores, as they're called, dotted down a valley of so much stunning beauty. It just doesn't really seem to take on board the surrounding majesty. 9/11. Not the most cheerful of starts, but on September the 11th, 2001, we all know what happened. Let's rewind to a few years after September the 11th. And the date is September the 11th. And as a result of it being September 11th, the flights were a bit cheaper. Which is mad when you think about it, isn't it? I presume the thinking is less people want to fly on September the 11th because there's a higher chance of a terror attack. I don't know. Either way, I got a cheap flight to Canada and I made my way to Ottawa, which, let's start there because that's where I started. And let's start by saying it's the capital. Don't beat yourself up if you didn't know that, because a lot of people don't. If you want to act cool in a pub, ask this question: what three capitals in the world begin with O? And the answer: Ottawa, Oslo, and at that point everyone will be stumped. And that's when you whop out number three: Ouagadougou. Yes, I believe it's Burkina Faso. Ouagadougou begins with O. And doesn't it sound absolutely gorgeous? So, I arrived in Ottawa, which is a more similar temperature to Oslo, and definitely not a similar temperature to Ouagadougou. Well, not when I arrived, because I arrived in October. And as my brief memory of it, despite the fact it was years ago, it's still fairly clear, was, wow, this is big and open. And why are everyone smiling at me and talking to me? Why can't I go into a shop without people being really nice? And I'm not from London. I'm from Brighton, which is pretty friendly. And I've travelled a lot of the friendlier parts of England, but I've never really seen anyone quite as astonishingly friendly as the rural Canadians. Right? And I think that's still true today. Even walking down this street, I just walked past a woman walking a dog and she gave me a big smile. And it's actually pretty bloody lovely. Why not? We all need to get on a bit more. And I think Canada historically, and maybe we'll get into this, has been, generally speaking, a good force for the world. Has it fucked up? Absolutely. Should we acknowledge that when I was talking about people arriving, there were already people here? I think I should. Should I talk more about the First Nations and Inuit? Yeah, probably. Should I acknowledge that the Brits and various people from various countries gave them a good old dose of smallpox? Yeah. But at the moment, I'm in my mid-20s and I've just arrived in Ottawa. So, we'll go from there. Of course, when I moved to Canada, I didn't actually know I'd moved here. apart from anything else, I didn't have completely the correct paperwork at first. So it was to my joy that I managed to get a job on the radio. And the way I did it, I used to do some work in Brighton on the radio. So I'd made a demo. I met a guy in a pub at the bar. He knew loads about football. I don't know anything about football. So he said something like, "Hey man, what's your soccer team?" And I said something like, I don't know. And he said, "Well, I thought you're English." This was a conversation I was going to have many, many thousands of times more over the years, but I didn't know that at the time. Anyway, we got chatting at the bar. Nice guy. Lots of people want to talk to you in Canada. They're so friendly. It's mental. And he said he works at a radio station. I said, "Oh, I've done some radio work and I'd really like a job in a radio station." And he said, "You need to speak to Chris Gordon." And I wrote it down on a bit of paper. And then the next day, I went to the building that has four radio stations in it, in downtown Ottawa. And I put in a demo with Chris Gordon's name on it. And I heard nothing. I continued living with my girlfriend. We were getting on all right, but I was really struggling because she was quite a long way out of town. And I'm not really used to driving everywhere. She lived in a small town outside Ottawa. And by the way, if you're wondering why I'm saying Ottawa, it's because after having lived there for so long, they managed to beat it out of me. You know, the North Americans insist on turning T's into D's. So it is Ottawa. But if I call it Ottawa, that's why. And if I call it Toronto, that's why as well. Toronto. Because they do. And you know, you can only stick out for so long before you really do find it a bit dull. So there I am, living outside Ottawa, and my girlfriend says, "Hey, kids, do you like them?" And I say, "I'm just gonna go to the airport." And she says, whoa, what are you..." Oh, so that was a little bit of a problem. She wasn't ready to have them, but she was considering them and I absolutely wasn't. And so we had our demise some months later. And at that point, I'd heard back from the radio station and they said, "We want you to do a little show on a Saturday night playing English music. You've got an English accent, so you might as well." So I started doing a show playing a lot of new wave music, a lot of 80s in general. So The Cure, New Order, Thompson Twins, and quite a lot of Canadian stuff because you've got a legal requirement to play Canadian content. So I learned a lot about Canadian music and I learned a lot about radio because I was thrown in the deep end with this show. And the show went well. And then one day I said to my girlfriend, "I think it's over, baby." And she said, "Are you sure about that?" And I said, "Yes." And if she could hear this now, she'd say, "I don't think it was quite like that. I think there was some shouting and arguments and tears. And I think you're sugarcoating it and making you look like a good guy." To which I'd say, "Yeah, probably am." But we broke up. And at that point, I had my job on the radio. So she was under the impression that I would immediately leave Canada, being that the only reason I'd moved here was for her. And I didn't. I told her, "I quite like this job. All my friends are getting married and having kids and moving to the suburbs in England. And I'm not a massive Canada fan because I live in the middle of nowhere with you. But I reckon if I move downtown and carry on with this whole downtown job, maybe that'd be nice." And she said, "Well, I'd rather not hear you on the radio every day, to be honest with you. Could you not just fuck off?" And I said, "I could, but I don't think I'm going to. Is there any chance you could listen to a different radio station?" And so it was, we broke up and I moved downtown Ottawa and I was a lot happier there because I'm a city person. That's my only real experimentation in countryside living. And I can tell you now, I'll never do it again. It's not me. I want to walk to a pub at the very least. You know what I mean? I remember when I first arrived, within the first 2 weeks, I said, "I'm going to walk to the pub." And she said, "Well, you can't." And I said, "Yeah, I can. I can just walk until there's a little village." And she goes, "Well, it doesn't really work like that here. There's not really any little towns. Well, you probably find one about 10 miles away." And I went, "Oh, I'll go to that one then." And she goes, "Yeah, but that one doesn't have a pub." And I said, "Well, of course it does, because all villages have got a pub and a church." She goes, "No, not that one. I think that one's just got a Home Hardware." To which I said, "In what fucking world would you build a village that takes power tools more seriously than a pub. And she said, yeah, you're starting to realise it's culturally different, aren't you? Why did you think I was taking lots of pictures of things that you found boring in Brighton, like the colour of taxis? And I thought, oh yeah. Here's me thinking they should be the same because they speak English, but that is not the case at all. And maybe that is why, and stand by, hold on to something if you're Canadian, because this is when you're going to get upset with me. Maybe that's why they're not that funny. Now, before you track me down and set me on fire, let me just help you a little bit. I've had this conversation a million times with the Canadians, and it usually goes something like this. Mike Myers is Canadian, Dan Aykroyd's Canadian, Jim Carrey's Canadian. You go, no, I know, and they're funny people. That's great. You've got some funny people. You've been quite pioneering in comedy for a country that's got a very small population. You should be very proud of yourself. But you're just not as funny as the United Kingdom or Ireland or, and this one's really going to hurt, Australia. Oh, that one must hurt. That one must fucking zing. And why is that? Well, I don't know. Probably because your life's too good. Like, we could talk about this for a long time. I've probably spent an unhealthy amount of time thinking about it. I'm kind of fascinated by it. If you look at all the funny people in the UK, they tend to be from fairly shit towns. Brilliant example, Billy Connolly. He's from Glasgow. He's more than happy to tell you it was an absolute shithole when he was living there. And he worked in shipbuilding and he had an absolutely terrible childhood. And that was, like it or lump it, the impetus of good comedy, good storytelling, and less of an ego, yeah? Here, oh, I did struggle at first, I really did. Just the sort of blandness of the conversation and how I wasn't got. And if you speak to any English people living in North America, they'll agree with this entirely. But one example I can give you is when I was on the radio, I played the wrong track and I said, coming up, this is the Police. And I played, I don't know, say New Order. And then I stopped it and said, what an absolute idiot. Let's have another go. Who knows? Maybe I'll press play and it'll be Celine Dion, but we'll wing it. And I just, it wasn't particularly funny, but it was something like that. And I pressed play and that was that. Phone rings in the studio. Woman says, I just want to let you know, I think you're a good DJ and you shouldn't be so hard on yourself. Now, that's really nice, okay? And it's very empathetic. And it's very in keeping with the Canadian psyche, if you can boil 37 million people in the same pot. But I love a bit of self-deprecation. I like it when people say, I'm a knob cheese, I'm a twat, I'm a cock knob. I like that, right? And I like hanging out with people like that. I don't like ego. And likewise, perhaps it's worth mentioning the other sensibility of the Canadian is they're more inclined to, I wouldn't call them boastful by any means, but they're more inclined to be serious and talk about acquisitions bought, which is all very good and well done, but I don't give a fuck. So I struggled with that whole thing to start with, and I struggled as the years went by, to be honest, sort of trying to assimilate and blend in. And Bill Bryson describes it a lot in his books. It's, and don't forget, he's American coming to England. It's just the way of life in England. You know, if you get in a taxi, he's going to be funny. He kind of has to be. It's kind of his job, right? If you try comedy sometimes in Canada, it's just like, are you kidding right now? Yes, yeah. And you'll notice a lot of people that do joke immediately follow it up with, I'm just kidding, which absolutely extinguishes any breath of a joke that was there. So there's a rant about that from Ottawa. I did work my way up the ropes and I lived there for 6 years. Fucking freezing winters. Let's talk about them. It's so cold that when I bought a Mini, I put on a sock on the gear knob because my hand was sticking to the metal gear knob. And then I think it got to about February before I added the second sock. Now, you know a country's cold when you've got two socks on your gear knob because your hand is sticking to the metal. So that was an eye-opener. And just to give you a flavour of that, when I say cold, I mean minus 25 I didn't know any of that was possible. I remember looking at the map thinking, it's probably the same temperature as London. I know everyone says it isn't, but surely it is. It's on the same latitude. I know the Gulf Stream helps a bit, but yeah, it's probably toasty. Is it? Fuck. Summer's great. I'm walking along in a t-shirt right now, and I'm in the mountains. Happy days. But winter's, wow. In that part of Canada, and it gets more brutal the more east you go. They are brutal. Newfoundland, how anyone lives there, I don't know. I'll give them credit, they're pretty funny. Yet again, see my chapter before on how if you live in a difficult place, you end up being funnier. So they're hardy people, connected, of course, with the Irish, and sound a bit Irish to a certain degree. That is proper grim. The Rock went there last year for a little look at the place. Beautiful, but, you know, you would want to be getting out of there about October at the absolute latest, and you wouldn't have any need to return till June. So, where was I going with that? If you, if we just spend a moment looking at the 6 years that I was there, I was on the radio, and my shows got promoted. At first it was once a week, then it was, I think, 4 days a week, and then I ended up getting a morning show, which never really fit me, and I got put with the wrong co-host. Not bitter. Didn't last. Got the boot, and it was at that point I'd been 6 years living in Ottawa. I'd had a few different girlfriends by this point, all extremely lovely. I was punching way higher than I could have done in England. The accent thing, remarkably, is still a big gravitas. I don't know why. We're so hardwired to find other accents exotic, and I could be as dumb as a stump. Many often nights I was. So, yeah, I managed to sort of enjoy myself immensely. Had just the best time in my early 30s. And then I got my permanent residence through a little bit of help from being sponsored on the radio station. And because I was permanently allowed to be in Canada, once I got the boot from my radio job, it was bad, but it wasn't that bad. I could, after all, move to a bigger city. I always found Ottawa too small, because even though it's technically a million, it feels smaller than that, because it's very spread out. Even licks over into the Quebec side, the French-speaking side. So it's very, very spaced out and not necessarily got a particularly kicking centre. So what do? I moved to Toronto. Now, this is the biggest city in Canada, and I can't remember what it is. Is it four or five million? Something like that. It's quite a lot. And I decided I'd move there on account of the fact that Ottawa was too small. Toronto wasn't that far away. I can get all my shit in a truck, drive down there with a buddy. The same buddy, in fact, that I'm here to see in British Columbia. He's now moved out here. But that's by the by. Just important to keep your buddies, no matter where they go. And do check in on them. So then I decided I'd move to Toronto. Oh, also, I got some money from getting fired and went to Africa for a few months, but we'll skip over that bit. I then moved to Toronto, and I had to sell my house because I had a house in Ottawa. Oh yeah, I should have mentioned that, but you get the idea. You just get grounded, don't you, if you stay in the place long enough. End up with a garage full of shite. So got rid of as much as I could, moved to Toronto, and I think I sold my car at that point as well. I don't actually really like having a car. I like renting one. I like borrowing one. I like driving one. But I don't actually like having one because, you know, tax, parking, and just, I think I want a beer. So I was very happy to get rid of my car and moved into a house share with a woman who I met in a swimming pool queue. Yep, we were queuing up for a swimming pool. I said, God, I wish I could find a place to live. I'm staying in a hotel or somewhere. I can't remember. Oh, I was staying with a friend. A woman in the queue said, oh, I'm just about to move out of a house share. Why don't you move in and have my room? I said, yes, I'll do that. Did that. In a moment of madness, some months before, I'd bought a giant fucking great printer. And I think my idea was to print Banksy's. Because Banksy had yet to be really discovered here in Canada. And every time I went back to London, they were selling Banksy rip-offs everywhere, making quite good money by printing them on canvas. So I bought this big canvas printing machine. That turned out to be quite a bad idea, and morally it didn't sit very well with me, replicating other people's artwork. So at that point, someone said, hey, can you blow a picture of my wedding or my kids or my dog? And I thought, actually, that's a better idea for a company. So I set up a company and that made canvas prints.
MrPhotoCanvas.com, giant, stretched, gorgeous canvas prints of your photos made here, downtown Toronto.
I then printed on canvas an advert for me and hung it outside a talk radio station. They saw it out the window, thought, bit cocky, but we'll have a chat with him. And that, I know this is mental, but this is honestly true, that turned into my show on News Talk 1010, which I held for about 6 years and was a absolute fucking delight to do. So just a bit of guerrilla advertising worked very nicely. So that's when I became more established in Toronto, and for about 6 years, I'm rounding some numbers, I can't remember the exact thing. I think I was 6 years in Ottawa and about 6 years in Toronto, until I started leaving regularly, very, very regularly, for quite big chunks of time. And it's been that way ever since, really. I've always had to come back to Canada for various business reasons, but I haven't had a radio show for a while. That's why I do these podcasts. That's all terribly interesting. Thank you. Oh, you're welcome, inner voice. But if we just rewind back to the beginning, I met a girl in a pub. I had no idea that I was going to end up living in Canada. But what a country. What a place that would actually allow such a thing. What a place that you can carve your own ambitions and you can carve your own career. And thank you. Like, what the fuck? I don't know what I would have been doing in my life if it wasn't for moving to Canada and it changing absolutely for the better and giving me great experience after great experience. And now, as a Canadian passport holder, as well as a Brit, I have to say it feels good to be in the club. And right now, I'm walking back to my hotel in Revelstoke, a little town surrounded by beautiful tall mountains. And I feel wonderfully grateful, deeply grateful, for the opportunities that Canada and Canadians who've believed in me have given me along the way. And I love this country. I do. Okay, they might not be as funny as a couple of other countries. But actually, in a world that's so shamelessly corrupt, isn't it good to be nice? Well, this is all very lovely. Everyone wearing shorts and t-shirts, nearly entirely wearing red to celebrate this warm, I don't know, 26 degree Canada Day. And I've just come down to the parade, which involves lots of fire trucks and children and giving out freezies and candy and a whole bunch of flags and some prick in a Hummer who don't know who he was. And and one of the vehicles was playing American Woman, Get Away From Me, which I think is quite telling. I mean, it's always been a patriotic, oh, I feel a bit tearful. Oh, I'm gonna go. Oh, I didn't expect that. You've seen through my callous exterior. Yeah, I feel a bit emotional about it this year because Canada's always been patriotic, but with the, and I'm not gonna mix my words here, lunatic in the White House threatening to take over the country, there has never been such a sense of patriotism. It is despicable, cruel, and foolish, to be polite, words were just beyond anything that this country's ever heard in modern day history. You know, calling the Prime Minister, the Governor, saying that we're going to make you a state of the United States of America. I mean, it's absolutely abominable. It hasn't, of course, done him any favours, because now the entire world knows that he's a liar, and next week he'll say he was going to go into Greenland, and then he thinks he'll be better off in Iran. With a less than 30% approval rating, we know that the man is a complete fuckwit. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because this long line of trucks and vehicles and kids giving out candy and all the loveliness is a really important part of Canada, but it's never felt as important as it has today.
although I'm slightly annoyed I didn't get any candy. I tried to stand next to the children, as if they were mine. You know, there's somewhere between getting free candy and coming across as a weird paedophile. It's gone 9 o'clock and I can still see the sun on the mountain, which amazingly is still snow-capped. Okay, where have I been? I went to a pub and it was great. Guess who I sat next to? A woman from Bolton. Hey, this is the most Canadian thing I've seen in a long time. I'm looking at a kid with a mullet sat on the roof of his dad's truck wearing dungarees. Or as they call them here, overalls. Dungarees. If you say, oh, that man's got a nice pair of dungarees, they'll say, I don't know what you mean. And then you'll say something clever like, well, you know, like trousers, but longer. And they'll say, I don't know what trousers are. And then you'll say, you know, the guy over there on the bonnet. And they'll go, well, he's not on a bonnet. He's on the hood. And you'll go, oh, fuck it. I thought we had a thing. I guess since 1867, we haven't had a thing. Anyway, I just went in the pub over there, and it was great. So there's a lot of people that live here for a couple of years, do the ski season. That mountain that I previously spoke about involves a ski run. And do their thing. Let's go back into the pub and see what happens. I might as well take you with me. Theirs is the best pub. Their pub, by the way, is called Rumpus. If you ever come to this part of the world, come to Rumpus. It's the only pub without tellies. So the big problem I've always had with Canada is that you walk into a pub and they go, hi, my name's Keely, where can I seat you? And you say, oh, I'd like to go to the bar. And they say, oh, sure, come with me. And you're, oh, I can find my way, I can see it from here. And then you get to the bar and inevitably they'll say, why don't you sit here next to Alcoholic Dave? And you sit next to Alcoholic Dave, who's usually quite charming and lovely, but you are glued to the screen opposite you. There's no TVs in this pub, so we'll go in there.
Oh, you're back.
There's nowhere better.
And your glasses are up. Yeah. Finally, I can see. Everything was blurry before, and I couldn't read the menu.
I'm not sure that there's any pub better than this, lads.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Lasses.
Or are we lads?
Lads.
Well, in Ireland, they say lads just as a generic term.
Like, dude, yo man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone.
Yeah. So I feel like we're in that boat. I
no,
mean,
no, we're in that
my
boat.
Glasses are on.
Yeah.
So I'm confident.
But we're lads.
Yeah.
Love it.
Nice. What you going for?
Oh, can I want to have one of those IPAs again? You know what I like about this pub? I don't really want to see screens.
But there's no screens here.
Yes.
I know. I'm That's addicted to footy and I'm just like, ah. But yeah.
You want to watch the footy?
Too much screen.
Would it be nice to not go out and not see a screen?
This is why we have no screens here.
Rock the screen.
I always ask my boss, hey, what about the Olympics? Hey, what about the final Stanley Cup game? Hey, what about like FIFA final? It's the World Cup. And Fred's just like, no, like I'll never win the battle.
Yeah.
Because I love sports.
Well, it creeps in, you see, because you can have a cheeky little screen for it.
Oh, I wanted a cheeky black and white. Black and white, no sound.
Black and white doesn't happen.
Brady. It would have a VHS tape player in the bottom. Like, that was my vision. And it never came. Did you have dinner, though?
I had some cauliflower chicken wings. Hang on. I had some cauliflower wings.
Yeah, and we can't even call it a wing because cauliflowers have florets.
You know what obsessed me about the cauliflower wings I got? They were in the shape of wings.
Weird.
They'd molded the cauliflower into the shape of drumsticks and wings. I didn't even know that was a thing.
That makes the cauliflower seem processed and weird.
Yeah.
It does. Surely the cauliflower should, as you say, flourish.
Yeah.
It should flourish its florets.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually want florets. We don't want not florets.
Do you serve food here?
Serve?
Do you serve food here?
Food?
Do you have food here?
I give you a dry pretzel.
In Ontario, you have to sell food.
No, we do. We have a pretzel.
Ah, that's how you got around it. So it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kept that bit in as a reminder to myself that often, still, Canadians don't understand me. Do you surf food here? That very common question.
Anyway, we went on to talk about Canada Day as my favourite song from Blue Rodeo kicked in, a Canadian band I'd used to play on the radio back in Ottawa before I made the leap to Toronto Talk Radio.
So here we are on the biggest day of Canada of the year.
Is it our biggest day of the year? You know, it's, everyone's mad about Canada Day now because it's colonialism and people are less happy, which is okay because it wasn't right what they did, you know?
They.
Colonizers, they. Them. Fell through these cracks and I kind of lost my head.
I stand transfixed before the streetlight.
With that, I wandered back to my hotel, avoiding bears along the way. I didn't see any, but there are quite a lot of bears around that area. And do you know, 2 people die in Canada every year from being ravaged by bears? 2 a year. I was determined for it not to be me. There is a slogan that you're taught if you spend any time in the wilderness, and that's how to deal with bears. The slogan is, if it's brown, lie down. If it's black, fight back. If it's brown, lie down. If it's black, fight back. Good luck remembering that when you're confronted by a black or a brown bear. If it is black, by the way, good luck fighting back. I say chuck it a salmon and fucking run. Ask it where it shits. I feel like we should know that by now. I spent my last few days in Vancouver eating and drinking and catching up with another old pal, a pal I originally met on a truck in Africa many moons ago. So there was lots to chat about, and it was great catching up with him as always. We talked about how bonkers our time in Africa was compared to the lovely and somewhat more sedate Canada. This roughly hour-long podcast was only ever going to be a flavour of Canada, but I have missed some very crucial things and I can't wrap up without mentioning them. So a few must Canadian mentions before I go. And we're going to start with this one. Poutine. Yes, poutine is chips, cheese curds and gravy. Best consumed drunk, ideally. Drunk and late. Poutine. I would arguably say it's the national dish of Canada, which doesn't sound that amazing. But trust me, oh, it's something else. Ask for extra gravy. And anyone that says it needs pulled pork on it is wrong. Just keep it real, baby. Just chips, cheese curds and gravy. And if you don't know what cheese curds are like cheese curds, but more churdy. No, curds are squeaky teeth cheese that doesn't taste that much like cheese. I don't think I did the best job explaining that, but now all you need to do is have a poutine. And since we're talking about poutine, we should also talk about one of the best places to get it, which is Montreal. Montreal's great for nightlife, so we should probably mention that. Really good. Everything feels a bit more European in Montreal, including the language, of course. Grab a bowl of snails and start drinking at 18, not 19, like everywhere else in Canada. Yeah, the legal drinking age in Quebec is 18. And everywhere else in Canada is 19. Which, by the way, is it me or is that a really fucking weird number? Where did they come up with 19? And as for America being 21, are you having a laugh? Halifax, we should mention that. That's the landing point of so many immigrants over the years in the province of Nova Scotia, or New Scotland, where you can toss cabers and wear kilts, if you like. Yep, still a big Scottish influence on eastern Canada. And the beautiful but violently cold Quebec City. A city I've only ever been to once. It's quite out of the way. It's about 4 hours north of Montreal, if I remember rightly. But it's beautiful. Founded in 1608. It's the only fortified city in North America, north of Mexico. And unique it is. And then there is the North, of course, the Great White North. And to give you an idea of just how ridiculously, absolutely, idiotically fucking mahoosive Canada is and how much of it is just tundra, tundra, tundra and ice, I thought I'd let you know this. This is true. I flew out of Vancouver directly back to Europe, right? I took off. I had a glass of wine. I watched a full-length movie. I had a meal. I watched another full-length movie and had another glass of wine, and I looked out the window and I was flying over a place called Igloolik, which is in Canada, very northern Canada, hence the name Igloolik, which, by the way, means there is a house here. I've looked it up since. It's an absolutely fascinating place, like so many of the dwellings in north Canada. Of course, there's no roads there, just Inuit settlements and First Nations settlements dotted all around the country. If you want to learn more about that, I highly recommend something Billy Connolly did way back in 2009 called Billy Connolly Journey to the Edge of the World. And actually, I learned more about northern Canada from that than being in Canada, because sadly, to this day, I have never been to any of the territories in the north, and because they're bloody expensive to fly to. But I will go. And my God, is there going to be a podcast in that? Northern Canada, no matter where I go, I will definitely record that one. I don't know when it's going to be, but I really feel like I'll never truly know Canada until I've been to some of those northern communities. And as luck would have it, I have a friend who's a water bomber, and maybe one day I can jump on his plane. I guess you don't really need to put out fires in the icy bit, do you? Yeah, I've just realised the geography. His plane might not get me that far north. We'll work it out on the day. So you've been listening to a podcast all about Canada, and you could say, well, hang on a minute, you didn't even mention... I know. There's loads I've missed. I've barely mentioned the politics and the wildfires, which sometimes can feel like the same thing. But hopefully you've got a good flavour. Of course I'll be back. Oh my God, will I ever be back? I'll be back a lot. But until then, until I can really record an episode in the north, I think I'll leave it here. Igloolik, of course, is way, way, way north. No roads will ever lead there. You'll have to fly in like so many communities in Canada. And it actually means there is a house here. Igloolik. Igloo, house, lick, there is, or place where there is. Igloolik. So the name refers to a traditional settlement, not a snow house. Information about the area's early inhabitants comes from numerous archaeological sites on the island of Igloolik, some dating back 4,000 years. Which, you know, we're not getting that far off Stonehenge material there. First contact with Europeans came when the British Navy landed up on HMS Fury under the command of Captain William Parry, who actually wintered in Igloolik in 1822. And without the help of the locals, let me tell you, he would not have survived that one. Nowadays, there's a supermarket in Igloolik. I've never been there, just to be clear, but I've never been anywhere near Igloolik, to the nearest several thousand kilometres. But I will say, I wanted to read the reviews. First of all, I can tell you a tomato is $3. And for context, a tomato in Toronto is just under $1. So, you know, when you fly stuff in, it does get expensive. But I was very interested in the only shop that's there, the only store that sells food, has reviews. And 7 years ago, someone wrote this Google review about the only place you can buy food in Igloolik, a tiny community of about 2,000 people. And the Google review says, this store is not great. Not great. Staff is not that friendly. Milk out of date, for sale at full price. I mean, can you believe they've even got milk? Of course it's out of date. I mean, it would freeze, wouldn't it? Just leave it outside for a bit. This store is not clean. And then my favourite part, there are better stores in other locations. Okay, I agree with that sentiment, but are you fucking going there, being that you've got to take a plane to the nearest shop? Also, that's such a stupid review anyway. That's like if I went to a five-star hotel that was absolutely perfect, other than the fact that there was a piece of fluff in the corner of the room, I could say there's better hotels in other locations. It's just not very helpful. So I think if you do end up in... Now, this is niche. If you do end up in Igloolik, a tiny remote village on a tiny island in the far north of Canada that you'll have to fly into and only has a population of a couple of thousand people and is nearly always below freezing. If you do end up there, support the local shop. Buy some milk. My plane went on to fly over Greenland and then I landed in Hungary. which will be my next tick off. If you keep listening, the next podcast will be Country 99. It is Hungary. I landed in Budapest and had a few days knocking around there. Podcast summit coming soon. Just a quick reminder then, if you have tuned in late or if you've got a terrible memory, throughout August, I will be performing at the Edinburgh Festival, August 2026. All the dates, all the tickets, everything you need to know, historyofelectronic.com, because the show is the history of electronic music. And it's a right fucking laugh. I've been doing it for years, and I guarantee everyone in the room will have a good time, because that's always the way it is. There's music quizzes and me pressing buttons on a sampler and very random comedy. All right, see you next time. Big love.
We make podcasts.